Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. Russia is making news in this country in two ways right now. We are simultaneously trying to manage a new ceasefire agreement with them in Syria. A little bit of success along those lines. You heard from Richard Hake in the news there. And blaming them for a slew of email hacks, like all this explosive Colin Powell stuff that's come out this week. Here's Secretary of State John Kerry talking with NPR's Steve Inskeep yesterday on Morning Edition.
How, if at all, has it affected your long-running efforts or the atmosphere around these efforts that even as you're trying to work with Russia, the U.S. government has accused Russia or suspected Russia of being involved in hacking the Democratic Party headquarters in trying to interfere in some way in U.S. elections?
Well, there's a lot of chafe around, obviously. It's disruptive, but people are being accurate in laying out what we know and what the – I mean, look, there are – this is a complicated set of circumstances, and there are things that we obviously deeply disagree with respect to Russia's choices, ranging from, Ukraine to the methodology of bombing and other things. But we're trying to find a way forward. That's the job of diplomacy.
Secretary Kerry yesterday on Morning Edition. Here to go over the latest in Russian-American cooperation, such as it is in Syria, email leaks and privacy concerns, is Fred Kaplan, Slate's War Stories columnist. Hi, Fred. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hi, thanks.
So this is day five of the ceasefire in Syria today, the arrangement negotiated by the U.S. and Russia to allow for delivery of aid to the divided city of Aleppo. I don't know if you heard Richard's news story that said Syrian state TV is reporting that bulldozers are clearing a main road leading into neighborhoods of Aleppo to make way for those aid convoys. How does it seem to you like it's going?
Well, you know, there was a seven-day transition period before the ceasefire and everything was to begin. And as you say, we're in day five. One is always a little foolish making predictions about the Middle East. The smart bet is always to be pessimistic and even cynical, because that's what precedent indicates. There's some room for hope with this one. The Russians really do seem to be getting impatient with Bashar Assad, the president of Syria. Russia's own attempts to influence the course of events on the battlefield have fallen off considerably, in part because they just don't have the stuff. They ran out of smart bombs a long, long time ago. Their airplanes aren't in great shape. They don't have the sort of logistics network. And as they're realizing, it's a mess, and they don't want to be part of a mess that eats up a lot of resources. At the same time, it's very complicated because Assad could play the Russians off the Iranians, his two main protectors. So Iran has to get into this at least as a tacit agent of agreement as well. Plus, the deal, and, you know, one thing that's worth noting, we still have not seen an actual text of the agreement that was signed by Russia and America. We don't know what the precise terms of it are. In general, the idea is that there will be a ceasefire, except that Russia and the United States will still have the right to bomb select terrorist groups, but not Syria itself. The Syrian Air Force is supposed to be downed. There are ambiguities over the definition of a terrorist group. There are concerns within the Pentagon about sharing intelligence with Russia. This still has a ways to go. But you know, the thing about Secretary Kerry is that he is an inveterate optimist, which in some ways have served everybody well. For example, the Iran nuclear deal. I don't know how many secretaries of state would have stuck with that as long as he did. But, you know, sometimes, for example, his persistent efforts to create peace between Israel and the Palestinians is just proved to be a waste of time.
Can I come back for a second to the secrecy of the agreement between the U.S. and Russia? Here we are, all consumed this week, the political media is, with revealing the personal health records of Clinton and Trump, and a treaty, or whatever the right word is, having to do with war with Russia remains secret, and nobody really makes a peep?
Well, it's not a treaty, but it is, I don't know exactly what it is, a memorandum of understanding. Presumably there are things in this arrangement or whatever it is that might legitimately be kept classified, having to do with disposition of forces and precise targeting and that sort of thing. It is a little unusual, though, that even, say, an unclassified executive summary of the agreement hasn't been released. On previous occasions, when the last time there was a signed cessation of hostilities, it was called, all but a couple of annexes were released and then parsed. And the parsing allowed one to predict correctly that this agreement really wouldn't last. Maybe there are the same limitations in this one, and they don't want to churn pessimism by making it public.
There was a similar effort.
I don't know, though.
There was a similar effort in February, which didn't last. Is there reason to believe this time would be different?
Reason to believe, no. Reason to disbelieve, a little bit more. But until we see some specifics and until we see how this thing plays out, and until also it's confirmed by UN agencies that these roads really are being plowed and that the aid workers really are being allowed in.
Because the report that we cited was from Syrian TV. Does that mean Assad-controlled and it could totally be propaganda?
It could be. It has been in the past, yeah.
And I want to get your take on the skepticism from Pentagon officials, including Defense Secretary Ash Carter. There were headlines about the Defense Secretary disapproving of the Secretary of State earlier in the week. And on Tuesday, Pentagon officials refused to even say whether they'd comply with their part of the deal, which calls on the U.S. to share information with the Russians on Islamic State targets in Syria. How do you understand this?
Well, first of all, on the compliance, if President Obama goes along with this deal, and it seems to be happening, he can order the Secretary of Defense and the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff or whoever is involved to do what the deal requires them to do. It would be an act of insubordination not to. So I don't think that's worth it. It is unusual for even someone like the Secretary of Defense to be raising this kind of concern so avidly in public. It is true that if, right now the U.S. and Russian Air Force have an agreement on what's called deconflicting. In other words, you give them an idea of where our planes are going to be so that our planes and their planes don't crash into each other. This is normal in any kind of multinational operation. If the U.S. and Russia are going to be actively cooperating on bombing targets, then that requires coordination. It requires some kind of joint committee to pick the targets and the timing of the targets and what planes go after those targets. And more than that, as a precedent to that, intelligence on where the real bad guys are. And this would mean sharing imagery and maybe signals intelligence as well about where these guys are. Now, I don't think that in sharing this information, the U.S. would have to reveal the precise sources and methods on how they got it. But any time you get into sharing intelligence, even the products, if not the means, people in places like the Defense Department and intelligence agencies get very nervous. Maybe 5 years ago it would have been something else to do this with the Russians, but now that we're kind of allies on some issues and adversaries on others, there is understandable nervousness about getting into this.
Fred Kaplan with us, Slate's War Stories columnist, also author of the book Dark Territory, The Secret History of Cyber War. And so this week, more hacked emails were posted on a site that analysts have linked to the Russian government. This time, the emails belong to Colin Powell, former Secretary of State. And the website is dcleaks.com. And the About page says the project was launched by the American hacktivists who respect and appreciate freedom of speech, human rights, and government of the people. So where do the Russians fit in?
Well, you know, with the Powell leaks, I'm not really sure where the Russians fit into this. I'm not sure if they do, and if they do, what their motives would be, especially given the contents of these leaks in which Powell goes on in very frank language about, you know, the fact that he considers Trump to be a national disgrace, and he's not too wild about the Clintons either. I don't know how this fits in with any sort of Russian active measures or anything. And I would also be a little skeptical of pointing fingers automatically at the Russian or Chinese government about these kinds of leaks. Now, the leaking of the DN of the Democratic National Committee and various Democratic sites and things like voting registration rolls in Arizona and Illinois, I believe. I would say that if the FBI or someone like them says we have very high confidence that this was done by Russia, by the Russian government, then it's a pretty safe bet that it really was. They have no incentive to this. I mean, let me give you an example. Remember when Sony was hacked, mm-hmm. and the FBI said, we have very high confidence that this was done by North Korea. And there were some computer experts at the time, I think most of them have relented on this, who said, I don't believe North Korea would do this. You know, this looks like an inside job. But then I found out in doing research for my book that the way that the government knew that North Korea did it was that they'd hacked into North Korea's network thoroughly. They weren't monitoring it in real time, but they could go back to the files. And they actually, the NSA hackers were actually able to see on their monitors what the North Korean hackers were seeing on their monitors while they were doing the hack. I mean, it was that definitive. And there are, it's tracing attribution of a hacking is hard because when sophisticated hackers work, they sometimes will go through lots of different points. So it's not clear initially where it comes from. But the NSA in the past decade has developed pretty sophisticated ways of tracing this back. And again, I think if the government says we have very high confidence, I think you can bet on that. Now, the distinction about that and why the Obama administration is reluctant to do more than just kind of condemn with words what's going on, is that there's a distinction. Let's say it's pretty certain that Russia is the source of the hack. It is not certain. What one could say it's likely, but there's no evidence that the Russian government was the one that provided this information to WikiLeaks, which in turn provided it to the American media, and therefore it's kind of a blowback operation where it starts affecting American politics. There's a distinction between espionage and trying to mess with the internal politics of another country. And the fact is, it's always a little awkward for the U.S. government to complain about cyber espionage because we do a lot of it too.
Right.
We, as for, you know, messing around with our political process, you know, we do that too, but we tend not to do it with each other, and it hasn't been done with U.S. elections, so at least not in the cyber realm. So that would be something to make a fuss about. But just getting into our stuff, I mean, I'm reminded when the Chinese hacked the Office of Personnel Management, and you know, made off with the files of millions of Americans. And the director of National Intelligence, General Clapper, was asked at a hearing, what are we going to do about this cyber attack? And he said, well, I don't really know if this could be called an attack. It's more an act of espionage, the likes of which we do as well. So, you know, it becomes awkward when you're to condemn something that we've been doing for a long time as well.
Let me ask you about another Russian hack that's been in the news and ask you related or unrelated. This is the one where Russian hackers are accused, at least, of attacking the World Anti-Doping Agency and leaking the confidential medical files of American Olympic athletes, including gold medalist tennis player Serena Williams and gymnast Simone Biles. The records show that Biles and both Williams sisters have tested positive for medications that appear on the banned substance list, but they receive medical exemptions to do so legally in the eyes of their sports. Are these hacks a response simply to the ban on Russian athletes at the Rio Olympics, as far as you could tell, or are they somehow related to the hacks on Colin Powell and the DNC? Are they different hackers? Are they the same hackers? Are they tied to the government? How do you see the relationship, if any?
Well, I haven't heard any claims about the high confidence of tracing that, but I mean, it makes perfect sense to me that the Russians, having been banned from certain Olympic sport competitions because of doping, would seek to embarrass the United States or other countries involved in that decision by showing that our athletes dope themselves up too. Again, not a big national security issue, but I mean, if I had to bet money on where this came from, I would say, yeah, that this looks like a Russian operation.
So in the context of your book, which is about the history of cyber war, would you say Russia is waging cyber war against the United States? And are we waging cyber war against it? We just don't hear it in the news?
Oh, yeah. In fact, this has been going on for at least 20 years. There was an operation back in 1997, and there might have been operations earlier. It's just that nobody in the government had intrusion detection systems placed on their computer, where a hacker who was eventually linked back to a server at the Russian Academy of Sciences was hacking into a lot of websites and servers and networks of U.S. military facilities and installations, trying to get information on military deployments, on missile defense, on all kinds of things. And these were persistent attempts. In other words, if they couldn't get in one way, they'd try another way. Then they would cover their tracks when they were exiting. And it was finally traced because somebody figured out how to put a beacon in the website, and even to create phony websites that might attract this hacker, and then, you know, it would insert malware in the hack itself so that I'm speaking metaphorically here, but when the signal went back home, it would carry one of our guys on its back, and we could trace where it was going. I mean, it was a pretty sophisticated operation on both sides, and you know, we'd been doing it to them for many, many years, and the Chinese started doing it around 2001, and you know, there was a war game in the U.S. in 1997, an exercise where a group of hackers from the NSA basically hacked into the Defense Department's networks. And while they were in the Defense Department networks, they found some traces of French IPs in there. They weren't playing the game. They were just hacking. This was France hacking Defense Department networks as far back as 1997. So, yeah, this has been in the news only recently, but this has been going on at varying levels for a very long time.
We're about out of time, but I think we can't talk about cybersecurity without mentioning Snowden, the new movie out today based on Edward Snowden's life. Have you seen it? Are you going to see it? I know you're a critic of Edward Snowden, but you saw the movie. What do you think?
Well, I should say I've just written a column about this for Slate. It should be up later today because the movie's been released today. Very briefly, I mean, as I say in my lead, Oliver Stone used to be a very good filmmaker. I mean, JFK was one of the most exasperating movies I've ever seen in my life.
Conspiracy theory film.
Yeah, but it was a lot of fun. It was very skillful filmmaking. Snowden, you know, perpetuates a lot of myths, which I dissect in my column, but it's also, quite honestly, a boring movie. You know, half of it is about him and his girlfriend, and it's you know, it's kind of, we never talk anymore. I mean, it's just cliched stuff. And the rest of it, the portraits of CIA venality and NSA venality, I mean, it's so crude. And the film style, maybe he's trying to be sober, but it's, I thought it was kind of a bore, quite honestly.
One thumb down for Oliver Stone's new Snowden movie from Fred Kaplan, Slate's War Stories columnist and author of the book Dark Territory, The Secret History of Cyber War. Fred, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Stay with us.